Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Man, what a day we had yesterday in the world of sports with all the basketball going on, the college basketball going on, some big games nationally, two big games here in Reno, which we'll get to very shortly. But we'll talk about that. Also give you my reaction to the initial college football playoff rankings that came out yesterday. And then we'll look at NHL Week 5 recap. Also take a look at how the NFL is looking mid-season and give you my reaction to that. Also take a look at how the standings we predicted at the beginning of the season are shaping up midway through. And then I'll give you my two cents worth on an interesting purchase that happened in the world of IndyCar. So we'll talk about that later on in the show as well. But let's start talking about the pack last night. Both the men's and women's team got to open up their basketball season here at home at Lawler. And two entertaining games, and one team able to come out with a win. Unfortunately, both were not able to pick up wins last night. But let's start with the first game up. Let's start with the women. The Nevada women's team having a huge, huge win against St. Mary's yesterday here at home. St. Mary's, one of the tougher, one of the more consistently tough teams in the nation in terms of women's basketball. Even men's basketball, too. They've had good men's teams as well here in the recent past. But this was a tough team coming into Reno. This was a hit for this team at the start of the season. And they passed, really, with flying colors. Nevada never trailed. Just think about that. First game of the season, this women's team did not trail to one of the more consistent teams in the country. And they came out with a nice first quarter, led 17-12. And then followed that up with an 18-point second quarter. The only quarter they got outscored was the third, and that was barely, just by 4 points. But they managed to hang on to the lead the entire game. And defense for Amanda Levin's team, I think I've talked about that before, but defense for her teams always seem like they're up to task. It's just been the offense that's been kind of waiting to catch up to the defense where they've been in the past, and this was an offense that had four players in double digits last night, with Essence Booker leading the way with 17 points, Maya West had 14, Amani Lacey had 13, and Michaela Mayo had 11 points, and then they had scoring from a handful of other players on the team as well. And a lot of those girls I just mentioned were on the team last year. They understand how this program operates. They understand how this team plays. They understand how to succeed in Coach Levin's system. And to see them kind of take some of these other girls along with them yesterday really gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling about the women's basketball season this year. This was a big, big test for them to start their season at home. And they came away with one heck of a win. Again, to never trail is unbelievable against a team like St. Mary's. And then you look at the shooting. Nevada was pretty much on point from the field, being 47%. That's not a bad way to start the season. 60% there in the fourth quarter on 9 of 15 shooting, so they were able to hold. I mean, really, their fourth quarter shooting was unbelievable. It was nearly the best in every category. I mean, it was the best in terms of overall field goal percentage. I mean, 47 in the first quarter, 46 in the second, 37 in the third, then a whopping 60% in the fourth quarter. They knew how to knock down shots. The fourth quarter and the second quarter, they both went 100% from beyond the arc, going 3 for 3. So again, fourth quarter, able to show up. And then although they were 100% from the free throw line in the first quarter, they were only 1 for 1, 8 of 13 in the fourth quarter, so a little rocky, but able to hit big free throws and help ice the game towards the end. And again, that defense just hanging on and making it tough for St. Mary's. It was a fun game to listen to. I was able to be here at the station running the board and being in charge of the radio broadcast here with our pal Doug Greenwald. And man, it was just a fun game to listen to, a fun game to be a part of from a spectator standpoint. And now November 9th, this Saturday, they host Sacramento State. It'll be the Pride Games slash Alumni Weekend slash Diaper Derby Baby Race. So a lot going on there for the women's game this Saturday. But a great first step for them, great game for them to build on for this season, getting to start 1-0 over a St. Mary's team. And I can't wait to see what they can continue to do in the remainder of this season. And then, unfortunately, the men not able to pull off a win last night against Utah. A very good Utah team, though. I mean, this is a Utes team that's found their way onto the Kentucky Wildcats schedule for later on this non-conference season, so they expect big things. They have big aspirations in their non-conference play. And they're a team that I can see giving Pac-12 teams a tough run this year. They were good underneath. They were good on defense. They just made it tough for Nevada. But I will say that this Wolfpack team had chances in the second half when they were starting to let Utah get away from them, where first game of the year under a new coach, pretty much essentially an entirely new team, you could have crumbled and let this game get a lot worse than it did. But this Nevada team kept fighting. They fought back into it a couple times there in the second half and never let Utah get too comfortable. And at the end of the day, I've said this through and through, at the end of the day, as a sports fan, no matter what team or sport it is, if they show fight and they fight to the end, that's all you can ask for. And that Nevada team last night fought to the end, but Utah just able to polish it off in the last few minutes there and hold on against Nevada. But in terms of where this team was at the beginning of the year with all the new transfers coming in, new recruits coming in, new coaching staff, there were times in that game where it could have got so much more uglier and just didn't. This team locked down. They stayed tough, and they stayed in it. They're going to need to kind of spread the scoring out a little bit more. No surprise that Lindsey Drew and Jazz Johnson were leading the way in scoring, seeing as how, I mean, Lindsey Drew obviously was out, but he's familiar with Jazz Johnson. He's familiar kind of, you know, the atmosphere at Nevada, so it wasn't surprising to see him step right back in it. And I mean, he lit up that the start of that game with those first couple three-pointers. He was 5 of 9 from beyond the arc, 12 of 19 from the field. But those first couple three-pointers that he hit at the start of the game, I don't think could have gotten the crowd any more hyped up. And he continued to make those plays. Lindsey Drew led the way with 30 points. Jazz Johnson right behind him with 16. So again, kind of the two familiar faces for this Nevada program. Not surprising to see them leading the way. And then hopefully everyone else just kind of comes along with them because they're going to need to spread out that scoring a little bit more. I mean, you're going to need that production from Lindsey Drew and Jazz Johnson all season long, but you're going to need other players to get into double digits and make a little more of an impact as you move your way through this season. And again, first game under a new regime against a tough Utah team. This was a bit of an ambitious game to start the season off. It was winnable for sure, which is why I think it was a great game. It's a tough opponent, but it was a winnable game for Nevada. And unfortunately, Utah just kind of made the plays there towards the end of the game where they were just able to ice it and take it away from the Wolfpack. But really take nothing away from the way that team played last night. Yeah, they made mistakes, and there was some stretches of sloppy play here and there. But ultimately, for the first game under a new head coach with almost an entirely new team, I think they played well, and the opportunities they missed last night I think before they even get into conference play, they'll be able to clean that up and be winning games and be more competitive all the way to the end where it comes down to maybe one shot or the final shot. But good start for him, solid start, promising stuff from that game, promising stuff from Lindsey Drew and Jazz Johnson and some of the other players like Zane Meeks and Jalen Harris and Robbie Robinson, some good stuff from him last night that they can build on and really continue to develop over the rest of the season. And then, of course, the two big games last night in the Champions Classic, the top four teams meeting up, Kentucky getting the win over number one Michigan State, 69-62. And honestly, I think that's a great thing for Michigan State. You came in as number one. There was all this talk of, oh, can Tom Izzo do it again? First time since 2000 that Michigan State would win. First time since 2000 that a Big Ten team might win. I mean, all the talk around them winning a national championship last night was kind of laughable, seeing as how it was the first game of the season. I mean, let's just pump the brakes a little bit and focus on just this game and how to play and how to dominate Kentucky, which they had runs, but the Kentucky Wildcats again just stepped up and made big plays more often than Michigan State and once again kind of showed why they are also a true blue blood for college basketball. And I think, again, Michigan State losing this game to Kentucky, one of the better things for them because they can now kind of breathe easier, not have to worry about being number one from start to finish. They can kind of rebound from this and use this as a lesson early in the season. And if you're Kentucky, I think best thing for you is you came out, usually a team with a lot of young guys. They have a fair amount of returners on this team from last year. So I think for those guys to get into this kind of a rhythm and get a big win to start the season will help them through what is always usually a tough SEC conference. And then Kansas and Duke. Duke with a 68-66 win. Their defense last night was nearly perfect. It seemed like every other possession they were forcing Kansas to commit a turnover. They had great defense down by the basket against guys like Azubuike. They were holding their own. And this is a Duke team that, once again, no surprise that Coach K has them in winning form to start the year. And we'll see what they can do in Kansas. I don't think they're in the exact same boat as Michigan State. I'm not sure if this loss is going to be as good for them to start the year as it's going to be for Michigan State. But nonetheless, you were competitive. I mean, you only lost by two, committing, I think, 27 or 28 turnovers. So, I mean, if you look at that, if you can clean up the turnovers and keep your offense the way it is and make more of those opportunities count, I mean, you could be blowing guys off the court, you know, just like 10, 20 points or something like that. So I think Kansas, they have a lot to learn from this game. And the biggest lesson is take care of the basketball. And then some of the other important games, not important games, but some eye-catching games. Number 5, Louisville, got to start off in conference against Miami. Got a solid 87-74 win there. Gonzaga had a nice showing to start their season against Alabama State, 95-64. So it was an interesting first night. Should be fun second night. We got North Carolina and Notre Dame is kind of the big game for the second day of the college basketball season. But we're off and running. So we'll see how this unfolds on our way to early April in the national championship game. But now I want to talk a little bit about the college football playoff top 25. The first edition came out last night, and I don't have too much of a problem with it, really. I know that obviously it's the first time the rankings come out. None of this is going to look similar by the time we get to the end of the season, especially since so many of the teams in the top 10 have to still play each other this year. So no one should freak out in the first rankings. I just wanted to give you my quick thoughts. Really, 25-21, no disagreements. I think Memphis is a good team. They were able to beat a then undefeated SMU, so them being at 21, I don't mind that at all. Boise State, 22, I think maybe they got a little gypped. I could have seen Boise State maybe at a 20 or a 19, but nonetheless, they do deserve to be ranked. Oklahoma State, kind of take it or leave it at 23. Navy, kind of same thing. I understand that. I'm a little surprised San Diego State didn't get a nod over maybe an Oklahoma State, or to be honest, I know, I guess SMU deserves to be in there, especially since we go undefeated, the one loss on the road to Memphis, not a bad loss there. So I think Oklahoma State, San Diego State was kind of my take it or leave it between the top 25, but no real disagreement from me there. 20-16, those rankings, my only problem there is Minnesota should not be in that group of five. They should be a top 15 team. I think they've played really well. I think they should be at least number 15. So that's my only real problem with numbers 20-16 is that Minnesota should not be there. I think they've deserved and done enough so far to be in that top 15 ranking. So that's really my only problem with 20-16. And then when you get to 15-11, I think Wisconsin is way too high at number 13. Minnesota should be ahead of Wisconsin. I think Minnesota should honestly be ahead of Michigan. Michigan has not looked that good all season long. Yeah, they're you can make an argument that their losses are against fairly good teams, Wisconsin and Penn State. But I think that without a doubt, Minnesota should be above Wisconsin. Wisconsin got way too much credit in this first ranking. So I think that they are way, way too high at number 13. And then Michigan as well, like I said, I'm okay with them in the top 15. I don't think they should be ahead of Minnesota right now. Minnesota undefeated through the Big Ten. I think Michigan with those two losses should not be ranked ahead of them as well. And then Baylor and Auburn, I think they're interchangeable at 11-12. I could see Auburn possibly even making an argument for being top 10. I could see Baylor making that argument too. But I think 11-12 is a good spot for them, right on the brink of the top 10. I think they're interchangeable, so no real problems there. And then 10-7, no real disagreements. I think Florida, two tough losses to LSU and Georgia, fair enough to keep them in the top 10. Oklahoma, the loss to Kansas State, I don't think that looks as good as some people may be giving him credit for. I could see Oklahoma maybe being at 11, maybe an Auburn being in there or a Baylor being in there instead of Oklahoma and having the Sooners kind of right on the edge. But again, no real disagreement. Utah, I think, got a fair placing at 8 with the way their season's gone, the one tough loss for them, and then handling their business in conference. I think Oregon could have been 6 over Georgia, with Georgia's one loss being to South Carolina and that not looking too good at all, and Oregon's one loss being to Auburn, who's number 11 right now. So I would say that Oregon on that could be above Georgia and have that 6th spot kind of on that playoff bubble. But then looking at the rest of those playoff bubble teams, so like I said, Georgia, I think they could have been 7, Oregon be 6. And then I would honestly have Penn State at 5. I get why they put them at 4. Again, a team that is undefeated, handled their business inside the Big Ten. And they've got, obviously, two games coming up. That's going to really help separate them in this college football playoff with Minnesota and Ohio State. But I would have Penn State at 5. I'd have Clemson at 4. I get the ACC is nothing to really shake your fist at. It's not that tough of a conference this year, but Clemson's taking care of business, and they're defending champions. So I would have them at 4. I'd have Alabama at 3, like they are. And then I would have Ohio State at number 2 instead of number 1, and LSU at number 1, because LSU is running their way through the SEC right now, which is our without a doubt the toughest football conference out there. So I think Ohio State has had a good season. They've handled their business, but inside the Big Ten, not as tough. So I would have gone with LSU at 1 and Ohio State at 2. But again, first rankings, so we'll see how it all shapes out, especially with Ohio State having to play Penn State, LSU and Alabama playing each other, Oregon and Utah will most likely meet in the Pac-12 championship game. So much still to happen, including Alabama and Auburn as well will play each other. So we'll see what happens, but interesting first rankings. All right, coming up after the break, we are going to take a look at the NHL as we are through 5 weeks of the season. We'll see how teams have shaped up and what movement has gone on in the standings. That's coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, 5 weeks are in the book in the 2019-20 NHL season. And once again, we take a look at how the standings have changed since the end of week 4. And not a ton of big movement. The biggest movers now just moving by a couple or a few spots up and down the rosters. So teams starting to get kind of settled in these divisional battles or these wild card battles. But let's start taking a look at it. We'll start in the Eastern Conference with the Metropolitan Division. Washington holding their number one spot at 25 points in 16 games, staying somehow above the hottest team in the NHL right now, which is the New York Islanders, a team that's on a 10-game winning streak. They have not lost. I believe they have not lost since. Where is that game against Carolina? Friday, October 11th at Carolina was the last time the New York Islanders lost a hockey game. It was 5-2 Hurricanes. Since then, they've gone on a 10-game winning streak. Started off with two home games against Florida in a shootout, 3-2 against the Blues, 3-2 in overtime. Then they went on the road for two games, beating Winnipeg and Columbus, then Arizona, Ottawa, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, and then Ottawa, the most recent victim again, which happened last night, 4-1. The Islanders beat the Senators at home there in the Big Apple. So right now, the New York Islanders playing such good hockey, 14 games in, 22 points, just 3 back of Washington, and they continue on this stretch. They'll catch Washington sooner or later, but this has been an unbelievable last 10-game run from the Islanders. Pretty much every aspect of their game, they've been playing really, really well. And nothing that's really blown anybody away. They don't have the best penalty kill. They don't have the best power play percentage. They don't have any of their players or goalies really leading the way. They do lead the NHL in shootout defenses. Shootout save percentage is the only thing the Islanders actually lead the NHL in right now at 1,000%. No one scored on New York in a shootout right now. So that's the only thing the Islanders, they have the best goals against in a game as well, obviously, as you would expect. Best goals a game against at 2.14, league average just over 3. You would expect a team on a 10-game win streak to lead the NHL in goals against. But that's really been it. I mean, there's been some good individual play, but it's not like they're on there blowing teams out in every game. There have been some tight battles, some tight scraps, and then some healthy wins for them as well. But this is an Islanders team that's put together just 10 solid games, and they'll look to continue that, obviously, down the road here. And coming up this week, they'll be home against the Pittsburgh Penguins, then home against the Florida Panthers, and then that's it. That's the only two games they have going on this week. That's Thursday and Saturday, two games at home in week 5, so a good chance for them to extend that winning streak to 12 and possibly overtake Washington for that top spot in the Metropolitan Division. And then Carolina was third last week. Was second last week. They have fallen to third now in the Metropolitan Division, after 15 games with 19 points, so 3 back of the Islanders. That's how the top 3 in the Metropolitan Division look. In the Atlantic Division, all 3 teams held their spot. Boston stayed in first, Buffalo stayed in second, Toronto stayed in third, all a relatively close division. Boston with a 4-point lead over Buffalo, 24 points to 20, and Toronto right there in third with 19 points. All three teams just playing well, just playing solid hockey, not letting anything really get away from them. Wild card race is still relatively close with the top two just 1 point behind both Carolina and Toronto in their respective divisions. But those three teams in the top of the Atlantic Division, again, no surprise that Boston and Toronto is in there. Those are two teams that have been mainstays in the top three in the Atlantic Division the last couple years. But still a pretty good surprise to see Buffalo there hanging in second. But they continue their good run of play. They continue to be dominant and playing some really solid hockey right now from a team that wasn't expected a lot of this year, but they've been playing really, really well, especially at home. I don't know what it is about Buffalo teams at home this year, but both seem to be playing really, really well. And then looking at the wild card standings, a couple of jostlings around. Florida went from the second wild card spot up to the first wild card spot. Montreal jumped up two spots from fourth to second in the wild card. Pittsburgh was the best wild card team after week four, but now after week five, they have dropped two spots to third. Philadelphia has jumped up two spots into fourth. Tampa Bay, once again, holding their fifth spot in the wild card. Just can't seem to get anything going. Tampa Bay is sort of stuck in limbo right now. They haven't put really a winning streak really together, but they haven't gone in a bunch of losses. It's kind of just one game here, one game there, a couple games here, a couple games there that they win, that they lose, and they kind of just hang around in this middle of the wild card pack. Because once again, I think for the third straight week in a row, they have held that five spot in the wild card rankings. And then we get to our two biggest movers of the Eastern Conference. Columbus, the biggest mover in the wrong way. They are sixth right now in the wild card. They were third last week, so they dropped three spots. If you look at their week, they were started off home against the Oilers on the 30th of October and lost 4-1. Then went on the road to St. Louis and lost 4-3 in overtime. Then unfortunately lost a game at home against Calgary 3-0, and then lost to Vegas last night 2-1. So Columbus 0-4, or really 0-3-1 in this first week, with one of those losses being in overtime. So this past week, not one for Columbus to get excited about or write home about at all. Struggled at home and on the road. I mean, three home games. To lose three home games in 1 week, that is a tough, tough stretch. And granted, Edmonton and Calgary and Vegas, all very good teams from the Pacific Division, but still not the kind of week you want when you're trying to hang in there with a very competitive Eastern Conference. And then that gets us to our biggest positive mover in the East this past week. That was New Jersey, who moved up three spots. The Devils, who have had such a tough start to the season with this defense that was supposed to be bolstered with the addition of PK Subban, and really looked to kind of stick themselves back into contention in the Metropolitan Division, if not the wild card race, and after being stuck at the bottom of the division really for the entire start of this season, they have finally made some positive adjustments and moved up three spots to seventh. Their week started out with a tough overtime loss, 7-6 to the Tampa Bay Lightning, but then again another tough home loss in a shootout to Philadelphia, 4-3, then bounced back nicely Saturday at Carolina, picked up a 5-3 win, and then beat Winnipeg last night 2-1 in a shootout to go 2-2 this week. Really 2-0-2 this week. They were able to get at least 1 point from all four games this week, so that is something that you can hang your hat on if you are New Jersey. And the New York Rangers dropped one spot to eighth. Ottawa stayed in ninth. Then Detroit just continues to slip and slide to the bottom, as they have now officially dropped two spots to 10th and last in the Eastern Conference. And now we look at the West, the Central Division, St. Louis and Colorado essentially jumping and dropping around Nashville, who managed to keep their second place spot, but the reigning Stanley Cup champions up two spots into first place in the Central Division with 16 games and 23 points. Like I said, Nashville staying at second, then Colorado dropping two spots to second. And St. Louis, the defending champs, who had looked rocky at times throughout the start of the season, really able to put something together this week with a 2-1 win against Minnesota to start. Then, like I said, that overtime victory against Columbus, 4-3, went to beat Minnesota as well, 4-3 in overtime. Then last night, beat Vancouver 2-1 in overtime. So St. Louis put together a 4-0 week with three straight overtime victories, two of which, the last two, on the road. So this the reigning champs starting to really flex their muscle, show us what they can do. Not that they haven't had the talent or the ability to do this, but it's fun to see St. Louis once again starting to flex their muscles in that Central Division that should be an extremely entertaining all season long. And then you look at the Pacific Division, Edmonton holding their top spot there at first place with 16 games and 22 points. And Edmonton as well having a very solid week, 2-0-1 for them. They started off by beating Columbus 4-1, then beat Pittsburgh on the road 2-1 in overtime before falling on Monday 3-2 in overtime to Arizona. But Edmonton will get a nice test tonight. They will play St. Louis at home. But Edmonton just continuing to play solidly. I mean, this is a team that obviously with some injury struggles last year weren't able to be the team that everyone was hoping they would be, but good this year. And they're just looking like a team that is ready to really take control of this Pacific Division 5 weeks in. And yeah, it's just a one-point lead over Vancouver right now, but Edmonton playing well and holding their own in a talented Pacific Division. And speaking of Vancouver, they are our biggest positive mover in the Western Conference, moving up three spots into second place in the Pacific Division. And Vancouver having themselves a great week. I mean, two wins. They started off with a 5-3 victory over LA, fell to Anaheim 2-1 in overtime, but take nothing away from a talented Ducks team that's doing a lot better than anyone expected them to do right now. And then a win over San Jose 5-2, and then lost to St. Louis last night in overtime 2-1. But it's a Vancouver team that once again, this is one of my teams to watch in the Western Conference. They continue to play well, up three spots in the second, challenging Edmonton just down by one. And you look at their week coming up. They have St. Louis and Chicago. And then on Friday, they have Winnipeg as well. So it's a busy week for them. For sure, this week they can absolutely make some indents into Edmonton, possibly overtake Edmonton to get into first by the time we talk again next Wednesday, looking at the standings after week six. But it's a Vancouver team that just keeps playing solid hockey and has once again bounced back from a rough week that they had last week, which dropped them into the wild card spot. But then again, fighting back up those standings into second place. They're a talented team playing some good hockey right now. Then Arizona up one spot from the top wild card team into the third place into the Pacific, which is where you'd want to be. And looking at the wild card standings, Vegas has dropped two spots from second last week in the Pacific Division to the top wild card spot. Vegas, a little bit of a bumpy stretch this past week. Calgary able to move up one spot into the second wild card spot. Anaheim drops two spots to third in the wild card. Winnipeg holds their spot at fourth. Dallas holds their spot at fifth. Chicago moved up a spot from seventh to sixth. Minnesota jumped up a spot from eighth to seventh. And then we have our biggest negative mover in the West, and that is the San Jose Sharks, the team that just continues to struggle. Even with Evander Kane out there on the ice, is a team that just can't seem to get it right. Full strength, they're a man up. Their power play hasn't seemed to have kind of the same kind of emphasis to it like it has the last couple seasons. And San Jose, just not a very good week for them. Short week, not a ton of games, three games, but didn't win one of them. Lost to Winnipeg 3-2, lost to San Jose 5-2, and then actually they did manage to beat Chicago last night 4-2, so they kind of salvaged their week with that win and also saved themselves from not being dead last in the Western Conference because of that win last night against Chicago, as LA holds the ninth and bottom spot in the West with 10 points after 15 games. But there you have it. That's how the NHL standings are looking right now after 5 weeks of the NHL season as we enter week six of the 2019-20 NHL season. And then I'm looking at some of the player leaderboards. David Pastrnak still having an incredible season, leading the way in overall points with 30 and goals with 15. Darcy Kemper having a great stretch for Arizona right now in goal, leads with save percentage at a .940 save percentage. And, of course, who else is going to lead in wins besides Marc-Andre Fleury? The guy just continues to be a solid rock for Vegas back there in net. He's had some iffy performances this year. One or two maybe that kind of gets you to scratch your head. But for the most part, he is the rock for that Vegas Golden Knights team. But that's where we are after 5 weeks. And we'll see how this continues to go. How long can the Islanders keep their winning streak up? How long can Edmonton, Boston, and Washington hold their division leads? We're going to find out as the season goes on. I can't wait. And after we come back from the break, the NFL season In my point of view, officially halfway through. With the single-digit weeks in the book, we move on now to the 8 double-digit weeks. So we're officially, in my view, kind of halfway through the season. So we'll take a look at kind of the standings, my reaction to that, and how my preseason predictions for the standings are holding up as we head into the second half of the season. That's coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
So depending on where you see the halfway point of the season as, you may have thought that was last week after week 8. To me, it's after week 9 as we get the first 9 single-digit weeks out of the way. Now we have 10 double-digit weeks left. That's just how I see it. Regardless, we can all agree that we are halfway through the NFL season. And if you may remember, myself, Sean, and our pal Terry, we all gave you our predictions for how we thought these divisions would pan out. And now that we are halfway through the season, it's time to check to see where we are in terms of how we thought this season was going to go. And I can't speak for Sean or for Terry, so I will just let you know their predictions as well as I kind of talk about where I was coming from and where these teams are now and kind of my reaction to it. So we'll start in the AFC and NFC's respective northern divisions. So we all kind of saw the AFC North playing out essentially the same way. We all had Cleveland in first and Cincinnati in fourth. You know, it was kind of just depending on the upper hand between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. I had it Cleveland and Baltimore, with both teams making the playoffs, then Pittsburgh and Cincy. Sean had Cleveland making the playoffs, and then Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincy. Whereas Terry had Cleveland and Pittsburgh both making the playoffs, then Baltimore and Cincy. Now, saying that, of course, you may laugh, you may scoff, you may be yelling at the radio, calling us idiots, all that good stuff that you do to people on a talk show. But I'm not going to sit here and accept any kind of mistreatment because I bought into the Cleveland hype train. As a professional football fan, my entire fanhood, my entire life as a fan, Cleveland has been garbage. And there was so much hype around Baker Mayfield, OBJ, Landry, Chubb, this defense. Maybe this is the year Cleveland turns it all around. And yeah, can we see now that hindsight's 2020, this team is 2-6, 0-3 at home, and they haven't done anything really of any kind of merit, and they're on a four-game losing streak? Yeah, hindsight 2020, Cleveland's not that good of a team. Now, some people may have known that or thought that at the beginning of the season, and that's great. Good for you. But for some of us who wanted to believe that this could be the year Cleveland turns it all around, it's been a disappointment for everybody involved. And you know what? That is what it is some of the times. We just buy into a team's hype. It doesn't pay off. So be it. But I have Baltimore as my wild card team, and really watching them at 6-2, it looks like they are absolutely going to be division champions. Of course, Pittsburgh 4-4, just a couple games behind them. Cleveland or Baltimore playing an absolutely great game or a great season right now with Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram kind of becoming a 1-2 tandem. Jackson just seems to be becoming more and more comfortable as a pocket passer every week. And, of course, we know he has the legs to wreak havoc. But one thing we all got right was that Cincinnati was going to be eighth. I don't think any of us saw them being 0-8 halfway through their schedule, but none of us were expecting anything from Cincinnati. They have delivered on that prediction. And then really Pittsburgh. And when Ben Roethlisberger went down, I think we all kind of shook our heads and thought this would be the year maybe Pittsburgh has a great collapse. But hats off to Mike Tomlin, keeping that team's head above water at .500 right now. And we'll see how they can finish out the season. And NFC North. I myself had Minnesota and Chicago going 1-2, making the playoffs with Green Bay and Detroit. Sean had Chicago and Green Bay making it with Minnesota and Detroit. And then our pal Terry in the NFC North had just Green Bay making it, followed by Chicago, Minnesota, and Detroit. But by those standards, you can see that none of us really expected anything from Detroit. Granted, they are in third right now at 3-4-1. I didn't expect them to have that many wins or a tie really going on this year, so they've exceeded my expectations. Chicago, It's been a bummer of a season so far. Trubisky and that offense just haven't really gotten rolling. Their defense has had some good games, but overall for their season, underperforming from Chicago Bears standards. So it's been a bummer to see them and how they have evolved into a 3-5 team through their first 8 games. Then Minnesota and Chicago, or Minnesota and Green Bay, rather. I had Minnesota. I thought they were going to come back and win the division. 6-3 behind a 7-2 Green Bay team, so they're still well in that fight. They might be able to pull that off. And then Green Bay at third, I just didn't know whether or not Aaron Rodgers and his new head coach and just kind of the whole system, they would really gel, especially with some new position players as well and skill players around them. But this offense has gotten better every week. They seem to be more and more comfortable with each other every week. So no surprise the Packers with the talent they have, since they figured it out a lot quicker than I thought they would. They've played really well and, of course, leading the NFC North. We'll see if they can keep that, although coming off really a bad loss against the Chargers. Take nothing away. I still think Chargers have talent to be a good team and a playoff team, but for Green Bay to just get 11 points, that was quite a shocker for them, but they still hold on to that top spot in the NFC North. Now we look at each conference's respective Eastern divisions. I had New England in first making the playoffs, then the Jets, Miami, and Buffalo. Sean had New York and the Patriots both making the playoffs with Buffalo and Miami. Then our pal Terry in the East had New England making the playoffs, also followed by New York, Buffalo, and Miami. So I think we all kind of had our sights set on the Jets to possibly, with Sam Darnold, make a run this season, maybe challenge the AFC East. Obviously getting mono and missing the 4 or 5 weeks that he did really put a halt to this team. Le'Veon Bell hasn't been kind of the explosive powerhouse that they were hoping he would have been. And they've got some good receivers out there that have made plays, but just haven't been able to put a whole game really together besides that Dallas game, which is their only win so far. Just really underperformed and kind of unlucky this season are the Jets. And then the Dolphins, you know, I had them in third. They're in third. Didn't expect a lot from them. I still think Rosen needs to be out there over Fitzpatrick. He got you your one win, so congratulations. You're no longer winless. Now that you can have that one win, I think it's time to once again put Rosen in there and get yourself ready for the long haul of the future instead of just the few years that Fitzpatrick might be able to give you. And then, of course, Buffalo in second. I didn't see that coming at all. I thought Josh Allen would be better, but I didn't think this team was going to be as good as they are. 3-2 at home, but 3-0 on the road is Buffalo this year. One-game winning streak as of right now. They're 4-1 in conference, 2-1 in division. This is a Bills team that has held their own this year and only about 2.5 games or so behind the New England Patriots. So we'll see that second meeting between those two teams. Could be very, very interesting. And then what else can you say about New England? This is a team that I think everybody expected to win this division. Sean went on a bit of a long shot there and went with New York, and I still respect him for that. But I think no surprise that New England is running this division. Again, a more narrow lead over Buffalo than they've had in recent weeks, but still look like the cream of the crop of the AFC. Even though their defense could use some work, their offense still has the ability to put up points. So no real surprise that they're leading the AFC East. And looking at the NFC East, I had Philly and Dallas and then New York and Washington, although I just had Philly making the playoffs out of the East. Sean had Dallas and Philly making the playoffs with New York and Washington. Then our pal Terry had Dallas making the playoffs, followed by Philly, the Giants, and Washington. So we all saw New York and Washington being the bottom of the division, which they are by a few games now, with New York at 2-7 and Washington at 1-8. And one team having a quarterback crisis but kind of figuring it out, and that being the Giants. Eli just wasn't getting it done, and having that internal discussion and making that decision to go with Daniel Jones, I think it's been better for everybody, even though they are just 2-7. I think that has calmed some of the nerves around that fan base and have kind of allowed everybody to get on the same page and understand what this team is doing and working towards, whereas Washington, they've gone with Dwayne Haskins Jr., I think they should stick with him because Keenum isn't really giving you anything, and they don't really have the offense around either of those guys to get anything done. But I think Dwayne Haskins is going to be the guy that, if they can continue to develop him, will be a good option moving forward for Washington. So we all three of us had the bottom two of this conference or of this division right at the halfway point. And then really for us, it was just whether you saw Dallas or Philly being able to edge the other out. I had my eyes set on Philadelphia. I thought maybe Carson Wentz coming back would have that confidence and be a little healthier. I thought they had some good weapons on offense for him to work with. That offense has been really hot and cold. Their defense has been off a few more times than expected this season as well. They're 5-4. I mean, no one really running away from the NFC East. Dallas is playing well and playing the most consistent, but I don't think by any means Dallas is one of the better teams in the NFC. I think they're just kind of squeaking out some results here, and then of course just holding on to that first spot. But we'll see who can end up being the division champion there, with Dallas and Philadelphia really being a two-team race there in the East. Of course, I have Philly, and then Sean has Dallas, and Terry has Dallas, so we'll see just how those teams continue to fight throughout the rest of the season. Now, looking at the AFC South, this is the only division that I am spot on with right now. I had Houston, Indy, Jacksonville, and Tennessee. That is exactly how it lines up. Sean had Houston, then Jacksonville, Indy, and Tennessee, so he was pretty close, just getting Jacksonville and Indianapolis mixed up. Then Terry had Indy, Houston, Tennessee, and Jacksonville. So Terry a little off there in his prediction of the AFC South. But I saw Deshaun Watson as the guy to hold Houston accountable and hold them to a playoff spot. I think he's doing that now. He's relishing it. I had Indianapolis in second. That's when I thought Andrew Luck would be there. And then, of course, Jacoby Brissett stepping in and keeping that team kind of where I thought they would be, which is in contention for a playoff spot. And right now, also still in contention for the AFC South. I have Jacksonville in third. Without knowing, obviously, that Foles is going to go down, I thought Foles would be a good quarterback for him. I didn't think he was going to get anything special done for him and put him into any kind of playoff position or division champion position. Now with Minshew in there, he's held firm at 4-4 as a starter. So we'll see what Foles can do, as he will become the starting quarterback again after Jacksonville's bye week. So see what he can do coming off a damaged clavicle, see how that affects his throwing or how that affects his play. And then Tennessee, you know, I wasn't expecting anything from Mariota. It was an even more dismal start than what I thought he was going to do. That's why they've gone to Tannehill. And Tannehill's going to give you some good performance, but he's definitely not going to be your guy for the long haul in the future there in Tennessee. So we'll see what they can do moving forward. Then in the NFC South, New Orleans, I had them at first. So did Sean. I believe so. No, Terry had Atlanta ahead of New Orleans. Obviously, Atlanta right now in fourth, but I had New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina, and Tampa Bay. Sean had New Orleans, Carolina, Atlanta, and Tampa Bay. And then Terry with Atlanta, New Orleans, Carolina, and Tampa Bay. So none of us were expecting a whole lot from the Buccaneers. 2-6, they haven't really given us a lot, but Atlanta has just been so atrocious this year. Wasn't really expecting that. I wasn't expecting Matt Ryan to come out and struggle as much as he did. But he really has struggled this year, and of course with the injury making it even tougher for him. Matt Schaub not doing half a bad job, or didn't do a bad job as backup. But yeah, didn't expect Atlanta to be struggling at 1-7 right now through 8 games. And then Carolina with Kyle Allen, they look great. Cam Newton now going on IR, probably not going to play again the rest regular season, so it's going to be the Kyle Allen show moving forward. And not that would be a bad thing for Carolina at all. The kids played really solid football. Then looking at the AFC West, of course, I had to put my Chargers up top with Kansas City, then Oakland and Denver. Sean had Kansas City, followed by the Chargers, Oakland, and Denver. And then Terry had Kansas City, Oakland, and the Chargers, and Denver. So Terry spot on right now in the AFC West with Kansas City leading Oakland, followed by the Chargers and the Broncos. Not a surprise that Kansas City is up there. I mean, Mahomes got him off to a good start, and they've been able to kind of hold that position now with him out. Now him supposedly coming back for their next game. We'll see how he is able to move around the pocket, move around the field. But hopefully the Chargers can get something going so I don't look as bad there in the AFC West. And then real quick, looking at the NFC West, I had the Rams followed by Seattle, San Fran, and Arizona. Sean had the Rams, Seattle, San Fran, and Arizona. And then Terry, pretty much the same thing. Rams, Seattle, San Fran, and Arizona. We all expected more out of the Rams coming off their Super Bowl trip. They have not lived up to that with 5-3 record. Seattle playing well. We expected them to. They're in second. We expected them to kind of be in second, just not behind the undefeated San Francisco 49ers, who are playing an exceptional game of football week in and week out right now in this season. But that's where we stand on our preseason predictions through the standings through the first half of the season. So we'll see how it all unfolds. 10 tomorrow night with the Chargers and the Raiders. We might have a few of our friends on the air to talk about that game tomorrow night. But when we come back from the break, an interesting purchase in the world of IndyCar. So we'll talk about that and how it might affect the sport moving forward. Coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
So an interesting purchase went down a couple days ago. Mr. Roger Penske, owner of the Penske Racing Team. He's got teams all over in the world of racing. And he essentially bought the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and as well as the IndyCar Racing League, and I believe IMS as well. And it was a huge move. I mean, this is one of the most iconic racing facilities, not just in the United States, but I think worldwide, in my opinion, in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway being bought and now being run by a true racer. I mean, Roger Penske has been in racing for as long as I have ever known about the sport, as long as I've ever watched any kind of racing. You've always heard, even if he doesn't have a team in it, his name is around the world of sport, of motorsport racing, regardless of what league you're in. You know of this man, you know of his accomplishments, and you know what he means. So to see him now in control of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, of IndyCar, of IMS, this is going to be a huge turning point for this sport. IndyCar especially keeps getting more and more popular every year with fans tuning in for not just the Indianapolis 500, but the Grand Prix of Long Beach, Circuit of the Americas. The IndyCar Classic had a great showing this first year on the calendar this year in the IndyCar season. So there is so much going on with fan interaction and fan reaction around this sport that it's great to see someone like Roger Penske step up and know how to approach it and how to tame it, really, and become and help it become even more popular and even more mainstream, especially with the way Formula One is being broadcasted on ESPN now. Open wheel racing really seems to be catching on worldwide, and even more so here in the United States. And I think with Penske now running IndyCar, it's going to make it even that much more exciting for us as fans to see how this evolves. His rival Chip Ganassi said it was a great move. Andretti Autosports team said it was a great move because it is. This is a man, like I said, who is a true racer at heart, who knows this industry, who knows how to help it succeed, is now in control of probably one of the more popular racing events. I mean, the Daytona 500, the Monaco Grand Prix, and the Indy 500 are three racing events that are always on people's calendars when the motorsport year comes around. So this is great to see. I'm happy to see Roger Penske do this. Happy to see what comes of IndyCar with this move. That's the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk about Thursday Night Football as well as the UEFA Champions League tomorrow. Peace!